Hi, this is Katie Day, and welcome to Creating Ripples, the programme that showcases inspirational women over 50 across the globe. Sometimes it is the small acts and achievements that can create the biggest ripples. We're here to share some amazing stories. They will make you laugh, sometimes they may make you cry. They will always inspire you. Today, I'm overjoyed to be interviewing the truly wonderful and inspiring Francesca Inskip. Francesca appeared in a fabulous film 2 years ago entitled Extraordinary Times. The film featured six incredible women, all over 90. Francesca was 93 when the film was made and is 95 today. Francesca was married very happily for 60 years and received a card from the Queen to mark this anniversary. She has been a keen bird watcher since her teens and continues this today, particularly with her middle son, who is a professional bird watcher. Francesca trained to be a counsellor at the age of 70 and since then has written 2 books on counselling and 1 book on counselling supervision and has edited 6 books on different theories of counselling. And a few years ago, she started an Open University course. After having her 3 sons, Francesca trained to be a teacher in her 30s. And in 1965, went to the US or heard from the US about counselling and teaching and came back to introduce that into the UK. And we'll hear more about that throughout the interview. So, Francesca, thank you very, very much for being interviewed. You do not look 95. Just let me say that at the beginning. You don't look anywhere near 95. You're incredible. And what a fantastic view. By the way, we're sitting in Francesca's sitting room and we are looking out at the most glorious view of the sea, even though it's quite rough today, isn't it, Francesca?
Yes, yes. But it's still wet and rough.
Wet and rough, but it's still a fantastic view. So tell us more about the counselling in teaching. We were chatting a bit before we started the interview of how all that came about.
I was saying that we have problems with mental health now, and back in the 60s there were worries about mental health then, and particularly with young people. And as a result of that, so they heard that, I don't know where this came from, but decided that in America they were using counselling in schools or counselling to help mental health problems and things, and went over to America and explored that. And as a result, came back and set up 2 courses. I think it was Reading and Kiel, the original courses, I'm not sure. They're for teachers to take a year off and become counsellors.
Right.
And usually professors came across from America to run the courses. And the course that I was on at Kiel, we had a professor there who was not CBT, but was before the CBT. But most of the only counselling in England was from Marriage Guidance.
Was it really?
Yeah, it was the only counselling, yes, there. And that was very psychodynamic counselling there.
Yeah.
Which some counselling courses were on that, but more were on. And then Carl Rogers was first heard of in this country, I think, by people. And,
right.
And the courses he was very influential in the courses that were trained then. And so that was, 1960s. I'd been teaching. I don't know where I'd start, but I'd trained for counselling then. No, I hadn't there. But
did you see that it made a difference, the counselling in schools? Could you see the impact that it was having for the teachers and the pupils?
Well, it was quite difficult to get it into schools.
Was it?
They took counsellors out and trained them for a year and then sent them back. And I think other teachers were quite not happy that here was one teacher sitting in a room being very comfortable.
Oh, really?
Seeing one child at a time, and here were they fighting with 30 in the class all the time.
So I think it caused
tensions in that
way.
Oh,
my gosh.
And sometimes it worked and sometimes it didn't. I think it did work well in some ways. And I was then involved, then my husband and I were then, we'd left actual, we'd both been in, with teaching, we left actual teaching and were working for youth, working for Essex, running courses for, we had a big mansion which we ran courses for young people out of schools.
Oh, did you?
And the youth, and helping in the training of youth workers. And that was in the training of youth workers that we began to get involved with counselling.
Right.
And I asked for a year off. I was asked for a year off to go and do a master's in sociology. And when the inspector came to see me, he said, "We don't want any more sociologists in education. They cause trouble. We need somebody to teach, to run counselling courses for youth workers and to teach youth workers counselling. I'll get you a place at Keele."
Fantastic.
So he got me a place and sent me off to Keele.
Wow.
Yes, yeah, that was, I say, it was 60 then, it must have been, yes.
Goodness me.
50, I suppose. Yes, anyway, so then I came back, and in 1973 there was a job advertised at North East London Poly to run a course to train teachers to come for it, like the Keel and Reading ones there. There was an Exeter one, and there were several others there running now, and this one to take teachers. And I applied, and to my surprise got the job.
Wow.
So I went straight from training then to training teachers, and I was there from 73 to 80. That's when I did retire at 60.
Right.
Yeah, so it was
right.
73. So it was 50 when I started in counselling, not 60 there. But that was very interesting. So I had teachers for a year who came and went back again, and some of them I still see.
Do you really?
Yes.
Oh my gosh, how wonderful.
Yes.
Because I was thinking, when I was at school, I was never aware of that being on offer when I was in school.
Right.
So I left school in 1977.
Yes, it was only just beginning then.
Only just beginning.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, so very few schools had them, but some did. Mm. And I say, in some places it worked well. A lot of useful stuff, and now there are one or two schools, some schools have got them, and there's a school at Bexhill, but the school had to pay themselves for the counsellor,
right.
Whereas they were before they were provided, well, they were part of the counsellor,
they were part
of the teaching,
part of the teaching staff.
And what a lot of the counsellors also did was helping to train teachers on how they referred children into counselling,
right.
Or you know, also helping them on how they could help children, really. Because it's the relationship that you make with children.
It is. How did it work with the relationship with the parents of the child? Did you have to gain permission from the parents before the child could have counselling?
No, they didn't.
Okay.
No, I think sometimes they let the parents know, but didn't necessarily know, because sometimes it was about the parents.
Of course.
Yeah.
Of course.
So
I suppose part of it was the fact that it was confidential,
yes,
so the child was able to.
Yes, and that was
talk about
trouble sometimes, in that the counsellor couldn't tell the parents when they came in and wanted to know what it's about and what she's saying.
Gosh.
So, well, they couldn't. You know,
well, it's a tricky balance, isn't it? Because if something came up in that conversation with the child, what do you do with that information?
Well, that's what you had to tell the child straight away, that if there was things that you would have to pass on, if there was things there, which happened, of course.
Of course.
There. So,
yeah, I mean, it's such a big issue, isn't it?
Oh, yes. There's a whole lot of difficulties in that, and difficulties in counselling, in how other, you know, how much you told other teachers.
So I guess it could be quite isolating for that teacher.
Yes.
Because they couldn't. What did they do with all of that information? There was nowhere they could go with that.
They had supervision.
Had supervision,
always,
right.
That's always been part of it there.
Yeah.
But that varied. And supervision wasn't as strong in those days as it became stronger and stronger. So that was a field that I moved into, and was with my colleague Bridget Proctor. We did a lot of work on supervision with the British Association of Counselling, and we wrote some of the first books on training supervision.
Did you?
And how to train supervisors and things, yes. Yeah.
It's important for the mental well-being
of
the counsellor, isn't
counselor.
It?
Oh, yes, enormously.
Mm. Mm.
Yeah.
Goodness.
So I mean, I was lucky to get into that, a very interesting field to get into, and then I retired.
How old were you when you retired?
Well, I was just over 60, I think, when I retired. Yes, then that was when I came out of the poly.
Right.
Then, and we came back here then and bought this
Did you?
So we got a house further in back in the town, the big house, family house we had, and we let that and we sold that and bought this, this flat, which was here, and then travelled.
Did you?
Yes. Well, my son, the birdwatcher, Tim, had done a lot of work in Nepal. And written all the main books of Nepal.
Really?
On birds and India as well with his wife. And we suddenly decided, well, we had got enough money. We'd always thought before we hadn't got enough money to do these sort of things. So we went off to Nepal.
Oh, my God. Isn't it I've been to Nepal. I've been trekking in Nepal.
Oh, yes.
Oh, it's
trip.
Such a beautiful country.
It's marvellous, isn't it?
And India. I've been to India.
Yeah.
I'm back there next week, actually.
Are you?
Yeah, they're both stunningly beautiful countries.
Yes.
So diverse. And the Nepalese people.
They're so
gentle. They are amazing people. Mm. Absolutely amazing people.
Considering the difficulties they live in, one of the more difficulties with all they've had recently.
Yeah, last year with the earthquake.
Yes.
And,
So incredible. Then we went everywhere then.
You went to Israel, I understand.
Went to Israel,
to Jerusalem.
Yes, because when we were running the house that we were running, we used to have people from abroad, and Israel came over and brought a school from Israel. They all did exercises out on the lawn.
Did they really? Did they? Before. What sort of exercises were they doing?
I don't know, just simple. Apparently every school does this.
Oh, wow.
Well, that's what they did, I think, in Israel there. So they did this on the lawn every morning.
What a great idea. Great way to start the school day.
Yes, wonderful.
Well, they do that in China and Japan, I think, don't they? The kind of Tai Chi and those kind of very slow movements.
Yes, this was different from Tai Chi, but different there. So that was because we made friends with them, so we went out and saw them, stayed with them, and then went to Africa and the States and Canada.
Wow. What part of Africa did you go to?
where did we go? Well, Egypt, I suppose, and down there from there. I can't even think now where we were, but and in the States we camped in Canada.
Did you?
A lot, yes. And trekked.
Wow.
Canada and...
What parts of America were you in?
Boston, I think. I stayed out a bit, yes, there. And San Francisco. Oh, yes.
That's a beautiful city. I haven't been to Boston, but I have been to San Francisco. It's beautiful, isn't it?
A couple of times I've been out there.
Yeah.
Yes, so that was what we did. But then... that's right. And then I retrained for counselling.
Retrained. Okay,
yes,
70.
Another one, yes, with psychosynthesis, which was a different...
Okay, so what's that?
That's counselling with a soul.
Oh!
You sort of, look at people, not only have they got emotions and bodies, but they've also got a soul.
Interesting.
It's got no particular religion with it, but it is that there's a spiritual side to it, so that you're looking at the person's spiritual side.
How fascinating.
That was really very good.
Did that change the way you counselled people?
A bit, I suppose, yes.
Mm. Mm,
there. And so that was when I set up here and started my own practice.
Oh, did
the
you?
First time, yes. Yeah.
Oh, my gosh, at 70?
Yes.
Or in your 70s?
Yes.
Goodness 70, me.
Yeah. And with supervision as well. And that was when I was writing the books with Bridget. We wrote the supervision books. Yes, we were remembering. She was down this week, and we were remembering. We went to Lanzarote for a week.
Did you?
To start our writing.
Did you?
Away from our husbands. We were
pleased to write. Sounds like a very good plan.
Very good, yes.
Did it work? Did you do any writing?
Well, yes, we did a lot of work. We had a lovely time as well. We enjoyed
good.
I remember it was January and we were swimming in the sea, I think. So.
Fantastic.
And
you used to go swimming? Was it you used to go swimming every day?
Yes, I did for a very long time, yes.
Good grief. In the sea or at the...
Well, the sea when it was warm enough, and then the pool. I put the pool there. Well, I used to swim about at least a mile back crawl every week.
Wow.
Sometimes more than that. Did my shoulder in. So I've got my shoulder is, the joint's gone really.
Oh, gosh.
So it's painful.
Yeah.
I can reach out that far, but that's
about it
with this arm there. But, so I stayed on in counselling until I was 90.
Did you really?
Yes.
Wow.
And I was actually supervising until 92, I think.
Goodness me. Really? Why?
I did a lot of work originally with the CAB down here and with the hospice. as well.
So CAB is Citizens Advice Bureau.
Yes, and I set up a counselling service there, which they hadn't had before.
Was that for the clients or for the
staff? For the clients. Well, staff used to use it sometimes.
Yeah, sure.
But it was often for the clients. They would, and the staff were, you know, very good at passing people on that they thought needed help that way. So
it's so important, that was interesting. Isn't it?
Yes.
I mean, mental health, mental well-being. I mean, it's a big thing in the UK at the moment. I've seen an awful lot since the end of last year, and the government is putting a lot of money into mental health, mental well-being. It's such a huge issue, and for me, it's one of the biggest misunderstood things in life. Is that it has one of the biggest stigmas, I think, mental health, mental well-being, because we don't understand it. And because we don't understand it, we're frightened of it. And what we're frightened of, we all stigmatise.
Yeah.
And we will put people into a box. So rather than trying to understand them and take responsibility for our own fear of not understanding,
We
just push them off.
Yes, or ignore them.
Ignore them. So what could start off as potentially a minor, if there ever is a minor mental health issue, if people are stigmatised, that then is allowed to just grow into something quite serious, isn't it, when it's not dealt with?
Well, that's the trouble with children at school. If they looked a bit odd, they're then bullied at once or ignored or things, and that, of course, gets their mental health much worse.
Yeah.
And so,
It's a huge, huge issue.
So they're still not putting counselling back, but whether it would be, you know, whether that's, they feel that it didn't work well enough to make it worthwhile to put counselling back into schools so much. But some schools have it.
I would have thought it's even more needed now. Because the issues seem to have escalated. The issues that may cause...
The mental health is much worse now, I think, than back when...
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it is, as far as I can see from reading. The Guardian has been doing a lot on national health.
Right.
There have been enormous articles every week, and they're saying how much this mental health is, how, you know, money's been cut from that.
Goodness me.
Yes, yeah.
Is it still run in America, do you know? Would they have counsellors in schools?
Yes, I think so, as far as I know. I don't know what, I haven't been back. I used to go to, went to a couple of conferences over there and met a lot of American counsellors.
Yeah.
And they used to come over here as well there. And but then when I stopped at doing the school work, I lost touch with that, really, in what's happening elsewhere.
Mm.
And myself lost touch on the whole with what's happening so much in the counselling field now.
But
British Association of Counselling has grown into an enormous organisation there, but, with a lot of people working there. But, I was interested in that. I was very interested in teaching people counselling skills rather than directors, counsellors, but people, teachers, social workers, all sorts of people working with people could do with counselling skills and helping people to talk and listen to them and work with them. I got more interested in that than in actually training counsellors.
Okay.
And people in that, and that's why I promoted the books on counselling skills for Gestalt, TA, psychodynamic, CBT, existential.
Right, so for people who aren't
young people, so they're all there.
So they're all different. So TA is transactional analysis.
Yes.
CBT is cognitive behavioural therapy.
Yes.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Just for people who might not be aware what the initials be, because there's lots of different theories and approaches, aren't there?
Person centred, there's more books sold than that, but the Gestalt one has had three. New editions of that. They've had so many
really?
Things. Yes, that's done very well. That's sold very well, the Gestalt one. And the new one is out, is on working with young people, which is working in schools. And that's a very good young woman in Wales who wrote this. And she's doing some excellent work on counselling in schools in Wales.
Okay. But, so you were saying before the interview that it's in Scotland and Wales, but counselling in schools,
yes,
but
I
not
think
in
Scotland.
England.
I don't know much about Scotland, but certainly in Wales I've got them. Both in secondary and primary schools, I think they've got counsellors.
How interesting that it's not in England, when it's in the other two.
And I say there are some in England, but very few. It's not there. But
and in England, we do have an odd attitude to a lot of things. We have great attitudes to a lot of things, but you also have a lot of odd attitudes to a lot of things that Americans don't. You know, in America, having a therapist is almost as normal as having a dentist.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You know, if you haven't got a therapist, there's something wrong with you.
Yes.
Whereas over here, you know, we can get paralysed, can't we, with that British stiff upper lip and not talking about stuff.
Yes.
And we don't wear our heart in our sleeves, and we don't wash our dirty linen in public, and we just get on with it.
Yes.
Which is really not good for us, is it?
No. And that's what always been taught to.
Yeah.
Yes,
it's so in England, you kind of got a barrier before you even start, haven't you, that you've got to push through, that it's okay not to feel okay.
Yes.
And it's okay to talk about not feeling okay.
Yes.
And even now, I think there's a certain stigma. I mean, until recently, I think if you went to your doctor with depression and it was on your record, it could go against you at a job interview.
Oh, yes.
I mean, it's just appalling. Mm. So it's hardly surprising that that people don't get the help that's out there for them.
Mm.
Really bad.
You have to hide it if you've had depression.
You have to hide it.
Mm.
Crazy.
Yeah.
And, you know, who's going to go through life and never feel... depression. You know, if you have no experiences in life, you might get away with it. But, you know, life is full of good, you know, there's two sides to the coin, isn't there? So it's full of magical moments, but it's also full of dark moments as well.
Mm. And it's how you learn to cope with
it. It's how you learn to cope with that.
Yes.
Amazing.
And
so
that's what counselling is about, in a way, and helping other people, how they learn to cope. Yes.
And everybody's different.
Yeah.
So what is stressful for one person won't be stressful for another.
Mm.
And it's about that non-judging, isn't it?
Yes.
Mm.
And being able to just encourage people to try something, you know, and feel confident to try something.
It is more acceptable now, definitely.
Oh, yes, I think
so. The tide has turned, hasn't it?
Yeah.
That it's okay to reach out and ask for help and not think you have to be strong and cope on your own and keep quiet about it all.
What didn't help in schools originally was counsellors developing a lot of psychological language which teachers didn't understand, particularly if they developed psychodynamic sort of language too, which would certainly put people's backs up.
They felt they were being excluded, or if they didn't understand, they might feel silly.
And that's nonsense.
All of that nonsense. All of that psychobabble.
How can it possibly be what your father did to you or your mother did to you that can upset you now?
It is so interesting, isn't it, when you look at different people and some people, I mean, I'm talking from personal experience here. I went through a lot of my life. I had a very, very interesting upbringing. And for a lot of my life, I was of that mindset. Mm-hmm. Oh, for goodness sake, all this psychobabble. Just pull yourself together and get over it. What's wrong with you?
Yes.
You don't know the half of it. You've got no idea what real struggle's like or what real trouble. You know, got my heart. Of course, what I didn't realise was that was my way of coping. Was to pretend that everything was okay, and to be really judgmental and critical of other people who shared their feelings, who weren't okay, because actually what they were telling me was that there was something that I needed to go and look at, which was far too scary, so I didn't want to be going there, thanks very much. So it was much easier to pretend that everything was okay and be very, very judgmental and very self-righteous. For goodness sake, I've got through it, what's wrong with you? Until I completely fell apart in my 40s. And that's when I thought, oops, maybe I need to go back and look at a few things. So, you know, it's how, and that I'm okay, thank you very much, and no, I don't need your help, can actually be the biggest cry for help, can't it?
Mm.
But it is also the biggest barrier to get through with people.
Barrier to get help. Mm. Yes.
So if you're presented with somebody who's pretending everything's okay and you're looking at them saying, oh boy, yes, so isn't. How do you get through that barrier?
And angry at other people. Because
angry at other people.
Yes, and how can you get through that? And I mean, it takes a bit of time sometimes to do that, really.
And of course, you can't force people, can you? You have to just provide that safe space.
Yes. I think
and wait.
What comes back to us all the time is what sort of relationship you make with the person so
right.
they trust you. There, I think.
Yeah.
That, yeah. Make the relationship so that they can hear you. So
they can hear you. But what a fascinating and wonderful, affirming profession to be in, because you must have seen the most amazing changes within people.
Yes. Still people stop me in the street.
Do they really? Do
yeah.
they?
Yeah, yes. And in the surgery the other day, somebody came up to me, one of the people in the surgery, I didn't recognise her at all, and came up to me, she said, "Oh," she said, "lovely to see you." She said, "You changed my life so much."
Wow.
It's
wow.
amazing to
yeah.
to have that. But
yeah.
some people, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, their view of it, which is, but I think it's just, you know, having the right person that they have to come at the right time and work there.
Yeah. Do you miss it?
Yes, I do in a way, yes. It's certainly in a way when I stopped, but I knew it was time to stop.
Oh, really? Okay, you're not. You haven't been tempted to.
No, no, I haven't been tempted
to go
back. No,
no. Okay. Yeah.
No, some of my counsellor friends still come and talk about their cases occasionally.
Right.
So they don't get real supervision from me, but they can come and talk about.
But they can come and talk about it.
They know it's a confidential place where they can talk.
Absolutely.
And that's interesting to hear what they're doing.
Yeah.
Yeah, so
has it changed at all in the few years since you stopped, or not?
Well, I don't. Some people have changed, but not much, I think. There was a long article in The Guardian a fortnight ago about psychodynamic and person-centred counselling and contrasting them and saying, because they're very, very different the way
right.
they work
right.
there, but also saying that, but both of them work.
Oh, really?
At different, you know, with different people.
Of course.
They may work
of course.
With different people.
Because every person is different.
Yes.
And also through the counselling experience, people
yes.
will change.
But
so what might work for them at the beginning.
Yes, but I think also what they got round to in the end, when I wasn't quite sure if they were saying it clearly enough, was it depends on the relationship you form. Whether
yeah.
you're psychodynamic or person-centred, what sort of relationship you form, although the psychodynamic always one says they have a transference relationship, they don't have a real relationship, you know, whereas
right.
the person-centred would have a real
okay,
relationship,
okay.
although it's, I mean, well, you can call it real if it's if you hold a lot back of yourself in a way, because there, but it is a much more real relationship
than okay.
also seeing you. Does that person see me as their mother or their father or their, you know, somebody
yeah.
else? There.
Yeah.
But,
yeah.
But that was really interesting, and I think that was a double-page spread on this about it. So that's more interesting.
Are your books still available?
Yes. Oh yes. The I think the Sage books are still selling. I still get about £300-400.
Fantastic.
Royalties.
Fantastic.
On those, so they're still selling. And the supervision books that we read, we published ourselves, had them printed up the road here.
Did you?
And we published, my colleague Bridget and her husband, they sell them through, they advertise and sell them through, and they pack them up and send them off.
Right.
And we're still selling those.
Fantastic.
We keep saying, oh, we ought to rewrite them, but we really... It's not just rewriting it, we'd redo, because we've got tapes that go with them which illustrate, you know, what you do
right.
all the time in supervision.
So they would need to be
re-recorded. And those tapes really need updating there, and that would be the difficulty to doing it. But she was saying this weekend that we're down there. They're still
selling.
Still selling.
So what are the books? I'm going to make a note of the name of the books that you wrote on counselling. What are they called? Can you remember? Are they on Amazon?
They're
not on Amazon. Yes. Don't worry, we'll look later,
look
and I'll add it later.
Yes, I'll give you a list of them.
And I'll put
it.
That'd
yes,
be great
to
find them.
I'm trying to think. It's
yeah,
I think the Council of the Training, I think it's called Counselling the Trainer's Handbook.
Okay.
The main one, I printed that myself and sold it. And then National Extension College in Cambridge took it and
right.
sold it. And sold it for years, I think.
Wow.
And then suddenly wrote to me and said they'd stopped. And they dished it and they burnt it. And then they'd got rid of the lot.
Oh.
Didn't even give me a chance of getting any copies back.
Oh.
I've got some copies, fortunately, there. But they suddenly stopped selling it.
That's a shame.
Yes, so that was stopped there. but it's still about, I think. People still get it secondhand.
Right, of course.
But it's, again, it's a bit old hat now.
I'll get the names from you.
Yes.
Mm. So tell me a bit more about the bird watching.
Well, this was through, I think, always done bird watching. I was married first time, and the boyfriend I had, which I'd had since I was about 14, that I married when I was 19 at the beginning of the war, when everybody got married anyway.
Yes.
Then, and he was quite keen bird watcher, so we used to go. That was when we had bikes, of course.
Yeah, not so much traffic.
We used to go as far as Pitt Level and sometimes as far as Rye, I think, bird watching, but also locally everywhere there. So I did a bit of bird watching with him always then. And then, yes, that was, and then I had my first two sons in the wartime with him, and then separated from him, and then married John at the end of the war.
Okay.
And John was a keen bird watcher too. So we weren't the twitcher sort that went all over the country.
Okay.
Like Tim is.
Oh, your middle
well,
son.
Was, yes, the middle son, yes. And he was just keen. I mean, all the boys, the three boys, are all, they all know a bit about birds and are quite interested. And the oldest one seems a bit more interested now than he was. But it was just Tim who took it up there and was fascinated by it. And then at one time, the Natural History Society, somebody from Reading got in touch and said they had a boy who would like to go and stay with their family who was keen on flowers and plants. And the biology master at grammar school, who was also natural history, suggested Tim went, and he went, and he went to his family, and then he then became very keen on botany and on plants and things as well, and introduced the boys to birds. And that they kept that relationship. In fact, they went to university together.
Oh, my gosh.
They went to Bangor together in the end. And Tim did botany at Bangor. Because in those days there wasn't so much you couldn't do. Now I think you can do something like bird. We kind of got doing bird watching,
right,
but you can
right.
do you
how
know, birds.
Interesting. There. I wonder if your son. How old is your son?
He's 70.
Oh, okay. I was going to say because my partner studied botany at Bangor University as well. He's 60, so I was. I just wondered if they might have been there
yes,
together.
No,
but no, okay.
Yes. 10 years younger. Yes. Two sons of over 70. Is
have you really?
Much,
oh my gosh.
We should expect you at 95.
Well, yeah.
People say, "How old are the children?"
Yeah. Oh gosh.
Anyway, Tim just kept it up all the time, and I don't know. He was dropped out of. He didn't do as well as his girlfriend dropped him at university.
Oh dear.
And I think that upset him, and he didn't do as well as he was expected to.
Okay.
So he couldn't go into research when he left university. And he did various odd jobs there in insurance and things in London. But then with three other boys, they bought a Bedford, and as they did in those days, and went across Europe and then crossed over and went by land to Nepal.
Wow.
Yes. I mean, they must have crossed seas. Well, they crossed sea here, I suppose, but I don't think from there. I think they went across Europe and somewhere then went through Afghanistan and all the places that you couldn't do, you know, now.
Wow.
And
how amazing. Yes, I suppose you could, couldn't you?
Yes, I think that's what
Once you go again mainland Europe, you could.
Yes. So that set
Goodness
him up
me.
In the bird
How amazing.
Line. He kept, they, the others went on to Australia or somewhere, and he didn't want to. So eventually he came home. He somehow managed to hitch himself home. It rang up from France to say, could we send some money over to him to get him back across the channel?
He got as far as Calais.
Managed to get as far as Calais. He'd had things stolen, I think, from him.
Oh, my gosh.
It was a trouble, I think, there, coming. But anyway, and then he came back and wrote... And I think then he must have written the bird first book, the first new book of the birds of Nepal. There'd been a very old one written by somebody out there. He did it. And then he met Carol and, to our surprise, managed to find enough time for a girlfriend. And she was very keen bird watching. She'd also done...
That would help.
Yes. So between them, they've written the main books of the birds of India.
Oh, my
gosh. In fact, they were in India just before Christmas... They went for a fortnight, and to a convention, which they were both given papers. And Carol said she's never had her photo taken so many times because everybody wanted their photo with them. Because, of course, theirs is the main book of
quite celebrities
birds. All the bird watchers wanted their photos.
How amazing.
So that's the...
I must get a copy of the book, actually, for when I go back to India.
Yes, I'll show you. You won't want to.
Wow. Francesca's just given me the book written by her son and daughter-in-law. Goodness me, that's some tome. Birds of the Indian Subcontinent. My goodness me. What a fabulous book.
Yes.
Wow.
And there are a lot of others as well that they've got smaller ones of them.
Oh, my goodness. It's beautifully laid out as well, isn't it?
Yes. I went on a trip soon after that was published, and when we turned up, we'd all got this book.
Really?
You needed somebody to carry it for you.
You really do. I might not be taking that to India with me.
Yes,
I think I might go over my baggage allowance.
You can find some smaller ones.
That's amazing. Yes. Wow. Do you have grandchildren, great-grandchildren?
Yes. Oh, yes. Yes.
How many of each?
I've got three granddaughters.
Yeah.
One granddaughter of 36, 37, who has a son of 18 months, Eli.
Oh.
After great trouble, she's managed to produce him, which is wonderful.
Oh, how lovely.
And she's just starting another IVF
is she?
Thing to see if she can. I said this time she'll have twin daughters, but it may not work at all, but 38. But anyway, she thought she'd have one try.
So
they're so Eli is absolutely gorgeous. He's there.
He is absolutely gorgeous.
Yes. And
sweet.
So then, and I have her brother. He's also got he's got a daughter of 19. He and his girlfriend had a child as they left school almost.
Oh my gosh.
And she lived with her mother for a time. Were they ever married? They certainly lived together for a long time, but then they split up and she went off with one of his friends and married him eventually.
Wow.
So, and the daughter was brought up by her, but still kept in touch with him all the time and seeing him. And now he's got another partner and has a son of two and a bit.
Goodness.
Lovely, Owen. And Jessica, the 19-year-old, has gone back to live with them.
Ah,
plus
lovely.
Boyfriend.
Oh my God! So you could. So you're.
I know. Yes, I've said to
her.
She's not. She's make sure she doesn't get pregnant. And they said they don't think she will because her mother, after her, had three daughters, and she was brought up with babies all the time and didn't like it.
Okay.
I think there because when this new baby was going to be born with her step. She said, if it's a girl, I'm not having anything to do with it at all.
Oh, dear.
Fortunately, it was a boy.
Okay.
So that's why she's gone to live with him, and she loves him. So.
Oh, that's good. But, so quite an extended family.
Yes,
do you see much of
I think
them?
She's very determined she won't have babies at the moment.
Okay, well, 19, good for her.
Yes.
Good for her. She's got her whole life ahead of her.
And then my youngest, Tim and Carol, have never had time for children. And
well, they've been going all over the world looking at birds.
Yes, they haven't. Yeah, they left it too late, I think, when they decided they wanted some. And then my youngest son has a 19-year-old and a 17-year-old. The 19-year-old's at Lincoln doing forensic science.
Fascinating.
Yes, fascinating.
I think that would be such an interesting career.
It is, isn't it? Yes, I think so.
Fascinating.
I realise there's how many sort of different jobs you can go into, and she loves it there. Playing hockey, which I like very much.
Ah.
I played hockey till I was 30. So.
Did you?
Yes. Of course, besides biology, I taught PE at school.
Did you?
Originally.
Oh, my gosh. Well, we're running out of time. I'm going to have to come back and interview you about that. about your teaching career.
Yes.
So what's in store for you? What's next, Francesca?
What's next? Well, next, I don't know. I just hope I'm not going to be bedridden.
I don't think that's going to be happening.
I die peacefully in my sleep.
You're not for a while yet, though, are you?
I do a crossword and a Sudoku every day.
Do you?
The Guardian crossword and Sudoku, the easy ones. So that I hope I don't get Alzheimer's, because I've had several friends with Alzheimer's.
Yeah, that's a horrid thing.
And that's
thing,
the trouble
isn't it?
Of getting old, your friends die. Or get Alzheimer's on you.
Well, you're still very mobile.
Well, fairly, yes. Yes, I get out.
Because there's quite a few steps up and down here.
Yes,
aren't
well,
there?
That keeps me fit, I think, having to go up there. Because if I go out the back, I have to go upstairs because we're in the middle of the terrace here. So I go up and get my paper. I'll have three mornings a week, I have help.
Right.
Comes in and they get the paper for me, but otherwise I'll go out and get the paper. And if I don't go, I try and, if I only walk up and down the terrace or along the next terrace and round there, I'll still share a chalet too down.
Oh, do you?
On the front there, yes, with some of the neighbours there. I didn't use it much last summer, but I think I'm hoping I'm going to use it a bit more.
Yeah.
Down there. It's quite nice too, because you get a bit fed up with the traffic. It's quite nice to sit right.
Yes, so right you don't hear the traffic.
And friends come and take me out. My son, the youngest one, the one with the two girls, he's the nearest. He lives in Hertfordshire.
Right.
So he comes down about every 3 weeks. Probably 24 hours, but took me to Marks and Spencer's this time to buy a new dressing gown and slippers and things and food. So other friends, I've got very good friends who come and take me out or I'll go out with them. Oh, and I go to WEA every week. That's the most important thing.
What's that?
Workers Education Association.
Workers Education Association.
And I go to a literary novel. There, we read a novel every fortnight.
Fantastic.
And we've got a very good tutor. She's excellent. And it's a very good group too. Very clever group they are, most of them.
Wow.
And so we discuss this novel in depth. This time we're doing translations from Italian, French, Russian, German.
Good grief.
I mean, they are translations. We don't read them. I mean, we have got one or two people in the group who read them. I was surprised in the French how many people read French.
Wow.
So
full life.
That's every other Tuesday I go to that, or the winter. And then in the summer, we just meet in each other's houses.
Perfect.
And just keep on. The tutor, she keeps on with us too as well. So she's so good.
Perfect.
Yeah. And that's really good because it's nice learning something. That's my important thing, I think.
It is.
To keep learning.
Well, you never stop learning, do we?
Yes.
Never stop learning.
And I love reading, so I'm always reading. I'd always, you know.
What's your favourite book? Asking what your favourite child is, really, isn't it?
Yes, I've no idea.
No. I really, really admire authors. It's such a skill. To hook you into something and keep you hooked in.
Yes.
And it's such a skill.
I've been rereading Virginia Woolf recently.
Oh, have you?
Yes, I like her very much. I wouldn't say it's a favourite book. No, I don't know what's a favourite book. Probably Winnie the Pooh.
I'm absolutely with you on that one. Winnie the Pooh. I adored Winnie the Pooh when I was a child, and I adore Winnie the Pooh as an adult.
About James Morrison, George Dupree.
They are just perfect.
The King asked the Queen, and the Queen asked. Some butter for the Royal Shire.
And Christopher Robin and Winnie the Pooh. On that note, we have reached the end of it. I can't think of a better way to end than Winnie the Pooh.
Thank you. All on here,
it's all on the tape, Francesca. Everything that you said will be going out.
They go out just like that, doesn't it?
Yep.
So when does this go out?
I'll let you know when I'm just going to end it up. So thank you. You've been listening to Katie Day and Creating Ripples. Listen in and be part of the revolution that is rocking the world. Women over 50, and in fact women over 90, are the new future. We are awesome, fearless, fabulous, inspiring, passionate, courageous. In fact, we just rock.